music video and film director, Liz Friedlander. Next on The Culture Catch.
I got rhythm. I got music. I got my man. Who could ask for anything more? I got daisies in green pastures. I got my man. Who could ask for anything more?
Okay, I think we have ignition.
All right, we have ignition.
So Liz, tell me, how did you get started as a director?
I initially didn't know I wanted to be a director. I thought I wanted to be an actor. And I went to Carnegie Mellon for a brief moment and went into the acting conservatory program there. Lasted about 2 weeks and realized I just didn't have the personality for it. For some reason, as a filmmaker, I could separate I hate your film, not I hate you. Whereas an actor, I felt like if I didn't get a part, it was I hate you. So I have a huge amount of respect for people who act. But my professor let me direct a couple one-act plays there, and that was my first taste of directing. And then left that school and went to UC Santa Cruz and took some photography classes, which I loved, and all of a sudden realized that everything kind of seen through a lens made sense to me. Applied to film school. Got into film school, went to film school at UCLA, and started working as a production assistant on music videos. At the time, MTV was playing music videos, and it just seems like...
There's a rare concept, isn't it?
I know, you have to remember way back. it just seemed like a great arena to go and learn, and a great place where you could visually learn to stretch your wings as a director, and it just... seemed exciting. So I worked as a production assistant and then slowly worked as a coordinator and eventually as a producer on some really low budget videos where we had no money to hire an editor. So I thought to myself, okay, I can do this. I went to film school. So I worked as an editor as well for a while. And then while I was editing, a friend of mine, Fred Schneider, who was the lead singer for the B-52s.
I'm a good friend with Fred.
You know Fred?
Yes, I do.
Well,
Fred and Robert.
I know Fred and Robert very well. Well, Fred and Robert called me up and said, Fred had done a benefit record, a Harry Nilsson cover for a gun control benefit record, and he said, I want you to direct the video. And I said, I would love to, but they won't let me. I mean, there's no way. Other people will be out there who will actually have had real experience, and the record company will want them to do it. So Fred, being Fred, said, all right, let me make a phone call, and I will call you right back. And he called back, and he said, all right, I told them that you're a huge director in Europe. So if they ask, just say that all of your tapes are on PAL and they can't really convert them and that you're big in France. You got the job. So that was my first job, was with Fred.
I love that. That's a great story, Liz.
I know.
But he went like this. Now, you know, Fred turned me on to Little Jimmy Scott years ago because we're both music freaks. He's like, I want to take you to see this amazing jazz vocalist. I don't quite have the Fred vocal. You know, it's
nasal. You got to get bassier and nasally. Yeah.
Nasally. Hey, Fred is great. That's so he gave you your first break, and it was a Nielsen song.
And it was a Nielsen song.
And there's this big Nielsen documentary that just came out. Do you know about that?
No, I don't.
It just came out in L.A. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. I'd love to see that.
Yeah. So that kind of started the ball rolling. Now, when you were at MTV, there were a lot of your peers were talented. Guys like my friend Teddy Demi were just starting out. Do you remember John Bendis?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a whole crew of people. Seems to be like a graduating class from there to bigger and grander things in the world of film and television.
It was a fun place to start out, and there was a lot of freedom in the beginning. But also, I think because, you know, I mean, that has a lot to do with the record industry. You know, there were more bands, there were smaller bands, they were doing smaller videos, and everybody got a video. You know, it's kind of every band who had a single got one. They might not spend a lot of money, but there was a lot of work out there. You know, now it's trickier, I think, because people aren't buying as many records. The record industry is kind of in crisis. Don't know why people won't buy records, so they want to make sure and make videos that are a bit safer to get people to buy records. So it's all been reined in a bit.
But you know what? The irony to all of this is the internet is just opening it back up, And now they're, you know, iTunes is just, okay, this is how we can build a model that works.
I know. Steve Jobs tried to get in bed with the record companies for years.
And they just, it's amazing they find him, this old boys network.
I know. It's funny. You know, I worked with you two, and I was talking to Bono.
Walk On, a great video.
Thank you. And I was, not to drop names, but I was talking to Bono. And he was telling me how Steve Jobs came to him and said, will you please do this iTunes thing with me? Because U2 owns all of their own licensing. They're distributed through Interscope, but they own all their masters.
Right.
And he said, I need someone to be the first to say yes. Nobody. I've gone to every record company, and nobody will say yes. And so U2 said yes, and then slowly everyone followed
suit. And Dylan
suit.
Was right after that as well. Mm-hmm. Dylan was another early champion for Jobs'
But
pitch.
It's amazing. It's the record companies have done so well by it, but it took them a while.
Well, I think it's, if you know, it's a new medium, and people are afraid to embrace it, perhaps. You know, the Internet's democratized information like no other invention since maybe the Gutenberg press.
Mm-hmm.
And now the average citizen can release their music or their films or anything on the Internet.
No, it's a huge equalizer.
Yeah. Doesn't necessarily mean you have the talent. You still need to go to school, learn how to read, learn how to write.
Yes, exactly.
Know how to edit. I mean, there are a lot of different things and a lot of different factors. Were you a Pittsburgh gal? Is that why you went to Carnegie?
No, I grew up in Los Angeles, and I went there. I mean, literally, I lasted there not even a semester
right.
for the acting conservatory.
Right, great school.
Yeah.
So you obviously have slaved. You've done very well in the video market, in the music video market.
Thank you.
This new movie, I mean, it must have been a bit daunting, wasn't it? The jump from the short form to a long form.
Yeah, I mean, first time for anything is daunting, and then first time for something that's, you know, you're responsible for 2 hours and a lot of actors and a bunch of someone else's money is always daunting. I mean, the good thing, I guess, the good and the bad thing, is we went into production so fast on this after Antonio said yes that I didn't really have that much time to sit around and intellectualize about it. It's just like I had to get to work, so I got over it quite quickly.
Now, one of the things that struck me was in a short form video, you might have to choreograph one or two segments. In this thing, I mean, some of those segments were 5 times the length of a normal video. Did you have to do a lot of painstaking preparation to really, really figure out your shot selections? Did you learn ballroom dancing yourself?
I did take some ballroom dancing classes from Pierre, actually, that subject of
right.
the movie,
right.
Before I started shooting this movie, because I felt like the kids would just look at me like a total jerk if I was telling them what to do and hadn't been through it myself. The choreography was painstakingly planned out. And in a lot of instances, the camera choreography was also painstakingly planned out. But in one instance, which is a big dance sequence, which is where Pierre brings one of his students, this blonde girl Morgan, into the dungeon for this really hot tango.
Really hot tango.
You know, Antonio and Katya, who's the actress's name, were so amazing that I literally threw my shot list on the floor and was like, all right, let's have some fun. Because you could shoot it anyway.
Right.
And in fact, you'll see on the DVD when that comes out, we'll have full-length one takes of the tango, because I so want people to know that Antonio did it and did it really well.
No, there's no CGI in that sequence.
No, and there's no dance doubles either, you know? So.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, but a lot of that stuff, like the three-way tango at the end and all the ballroom stuff at the end, had to be planned out, not just to make the way it looked, but also just logistically. You know, we were on a tight schedule, and so it had to be pre-figured out.
It was quite a coup landing Antonio. Did you have any influence in any of that, in that decision making with Antonio?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I influenced Antonio. I mean, we went to Antonio initially for this role because he just seemed a good fit. He's European, he's kind of effortlessly elegant.
Effortlessly charismatic.
Yeah. He exudes charm, and I knew he could dance because he had danced with Cheetah Rivera on Broadway. And we went to him. He was in the middle of shooting Zorro 2, which was a really long shoot for him. And he's not the kind of guy that lines up 20 projects in a row. So he said, I'm very interested. I'm not going to give you an answer until I'm done with this, because I'm really absorbed in Zorro right now. So if you want to wait, you can reapproach me. And so we thought to ourselves, okay. And I sat down with the producers and we said, let's make a list of other actors to go to while we wait for Antonio, or at least to think about going to. And we never put another name on the list because, quite frankly, there was no one else I thought who could do it without looking like an ass. To be really honest, it's just there's no one else I thought that could do it without looking like they were trying too hard. Like, he just brings so much naturally to the table with this character by virtue of who he is, that it required a lot less posturing than it would have with another actor.
I completely buy into the scene where he's in the principal's office for the first time and he's showing the young guy, you know, the difference between being a gentleman and just being a slug, basically.
Yes.
And it was just, that must have been a great scene to shoot.
It was fun. I mean, those scenes, those takes hold for a really long time. We just kind of hold in these weird, awkward two shots because the two of them were so great. Antonio and Marcus is the kid who plays Eddie. And just seeing Antonio there in his suit and Eddie in his, like, jeans hanging off his ass was just such a good study in contrast.
Now, I have to ask you, talking about contrast, in the short-form video, there's oftentimes, you know, there's so many jump cuts in a narrative. And this, you just laid it out. You had the opportunity to linger on a shot, linger on a two-shot, linger on a close-up, where perhaps if you're directing a video for YouTube, you know, you have to cut and you have to move the story along. Was that something that made you happy working in this medium? Like, you could get back to your film school days and say, wow.
Yeah, I think, you know, working in the feature medium is completely different. I think as a director, you need to know when to get the hell out of the way. You know, when, like, the two shot that you talked about in the principal's office, like, there's a scene where Rob Brown's character Rock goes to Antonio's apartment, and, you know, it's in scenes like that where, as a director, you realize why the over-the-shoulder shot has been in existence since the beginning of filmmaking time, because if the performance is believable and the dialogue is good, all you need to do is tie these two people together, and that's it. You know, similarly, I guess, or antithetically, there were times in the dance sequences where I did want to use some quick cutting and some speed ramping, and especially when I wanted to show it through the eyes of the kids, how they were absorbing the stuff that Antonio was teaching them.
Right. The fact that you had real source material, that must have been an added bonus. So you had somebody to really bounce some of the ideas off. You had Pierre to bounce the ideas off of.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, we worked with Pierre a lot. I came to New York before we started shooting and just spent time with him. He took me into the schools and into the high schools and got me entree into them. It's extremely hard to get, just to be able to go and walk around in the public schools in New York. So he gave me entrance there, and I could see the security lineups and how noisy the hallways were. And I would just watch his classes, and he would say certain things, and we'd put them straight into dialogue for the script. And then similarly, you know, the kids, before they started shooting this movie, had like a 4-week ballroom boot camp with Pierre, and I would watch their dance rehearsals, and if something funny would happen with them, we would put it right into the script. So it was nice having him around because it made it kind of like a more breathing, growing experience on the movie.
And I think perhaps maybe because you're working with New Line, which isn't a super huge studio, there was probably less interference, I'm hoping.
I had really, I mean, I think I'm the anomaly of the director who had a good experience working with the studio. I had a great time with them. They really weren't around that much. They weren't in my business. They didn't comment on dailies that much. They were great. I think, one, because they're a smaller studio, and two, because this came up before ballroom dancing was popular. And I think in a weird way, they didn't know what a priority it would be for them until they got the cut in and it kind of started aligning up with, you know, when we were shooting, Mad Hot Ballroom hadn't really come out in wide release yet. It had been at Sundance, but it wasn't really on people's radar. There was no Dancing with the Stars. So I think it also, in a weird way, timing was lucky for me, certainly now that it's coming out when it's coming out, but also there wasn't all this heat on us while we were shooting, so we got left alone.
And how about the heat of having movies like Moulin Rouge or Chicago, which were just incredible visual eye candy and just in complete packages? Did that weigh heavy on you at all? Were they influential? And, like, you know, they've raised the bar way up here with these movies.
Initially, you know, I mean, thinking about, like, Baz Luhrmann's Moulin Rouge is just, like, it's just such a piece of art. It's just an opera, you know.
Yeah.
But because it is an opera, I also had to remember that wasn't what we were doing. I think...
Right.
you know, this movie isn't a movie where people just burst into dance. It's where, I mean, the challenge for me in shooting the dance sequences was making them about characters and making them about, like, okay, every time Rock and Lorette dance together, they're having the conversation that they can't have in the halls with each other. And in the three-way tango at the end, it's all about the competition between the two girls on the dance floor. So certainly, you know, I started looking at those movies initially and how they shot dance, and then I stopped because I realized that I just had a different job to do.
Right. Good answer. Good answer. Who are some of your favorite directors?
Favorite director is such a hard question. I'm such a movie fan. Like, I love popcorn movies where it's just big guilty pleasures as much as I love crazy foreign films. So directors working today, I love Michel Gondry. I think Eternal Sunshine was an amazing movie, and he was able to get away with a lot of visual trickery because it was about something very simple and very sweet and about love. Who else is out now that I love? Ang Lee, I love, and I respect him so much because he does, I mean, if you look at his body of work and the different movies he's done, The Hulk, The Ice Storm, Sense and Sensibility, Brokeback, he never treads the same ground twice, and I think as a director, when you realize that a movie takes up a year and a half of your life, you realize what he's also doing as a person is trying to expand his world as a person. And I think that's really lovely. I love Antonioni films. And I, you know, I'm just such a, I could go on and on and on.
Well,
and
that's
on
great. So, you know, it's whatever moves suits you.
Whatever suits me. Yeah. I mean, I love good stories. I love movies that make me think, and I love laughing. I mean, Groundhog Day is still like one of my favorite movies, and it's just a very simple movie. But as a director, you look at a director who took a movie where the same event happens again and again and again and made it compelling and entertaining.
All those shades of gray.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you get a chance to read much anymore? I mean, besides reading scripts now, and obviously you'll probably have a lot more to read after the movie is released. But do you read a lot of good fiction?
You know what's so funny is I just made a concerted effort, I think a few months ago. So in the past few months, yes, I've read some great books, to start reading fiction, because I think as a director, and then the same thing happened to me with music and music videos. As a director, you read scripts, and then you read books that people sent you that they want to change into movies, and you read magazine articles. And same as a music video director, I listened to music for work so much that I stopped listening to music for pleasure. And so now I've actually started reading, surprise, surprise, novels again, fiction and nonfiction, just because at the end of the day, it's not about being a director, it's about being a person.
You do have a life outside of
you have to, but you have to remind yourself, so yes.
You know, I wanted to ask you, was there any pressure to hire a man to direct this movie, take the lead? Did you feel any outside influence, or did they just like your style? They saw the body of work that you had you developed as a music video director.
Yeah, I don't know about the woman question. It's funny. It's something that comes up. Somebody asked me what it was like to be a woman director, and I said I couldn't really compare it to being a man director because I didn't know. You know, if it was ever discussed, I wasn't in the room, so I don't know about it. I mean, I have to say, I've had a pretty good run of it, and I know that other people have had hard times, other women have had hard times, and certainly blown open doors for me. But in a weird way, I feel like for me, and for everyone it's different, but for me, the progressive stance to take about being a woman in this industry is to just put your head down and go and try to do good work, and if the work is good, it will open more doors.
Are there any dream projects when you were in film school that you thought, God, I'd love to option that, I'd love to get, you know, sink my teeth into this project as a director?
There are a couple. I mean, there's one book that I've actually optioned that I'm writing right now to adapt called Clarinet Polka, which couldn't be any more different than Take the Lead. It's by a writer called Keith Mallard from Vancouver, and it is, I want to say it's like the Deer Hunter meets Lolita. It is about this guy who comes home. It's a period piece, late 60s, early 70s, about a guy who comes home, was in Guam, not in active duty, to his like tiny hometown in Ohio, and has to reconcile with his family, who he's totally distanced from, falls in love with a 15-year-old girl who he can't be with, so he just has a friendship with her, and she really helps him come of age as he battles alcoholism and a whole other things. But it also has a really dark sense of humor, and there's some amazingly funny parts. So that I'm looking forward to. And then
sounds a little like Ghost World.
Same kind of introspective, yeah, personal thing, but it's funny. It's like at the heart of it is kind of this great unrequited love story as well.
Right.
So as much as it's weird and quirky, there's something very, very sweet,
right,
about it. And then there's a Russell Banks book called Rule of the Bone that I always wanted to make into a movie, though someone has the rights, and I don't know who, but they're not giving it up. But that would have been an amazing movie.
Right. Well, we're giving away a trade secret.
There.
How about the graphic novel? Suddenly the graphic novel has become really hot. History of Violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all of, obviously, the cartoon aspects of the graphic novel. But, you know, the graphic novel has matured. It's grown up. It's considered a literary art form now.
What's amazing about the transition from graphic novel to film is I almost feel like it translates into this kind of modern film noir, which is so exciting to,
right,
see that element come into movies. I mean, it's funny. I'm very late. I'm like the nerdiest person in that. I think I'm the latest person in the United States to come into reading of graphic novels because I've just started really looking at them as more than, you know, quote unquote comics, and really reading them and getting into them. So I'm super late to the game.
Well, don't worry. I think a lot of people are. You know, I think, you know, for the most part, comic book readers who are that serious were geeks. So you're not a geek, don't worry.
We're all geeks.
well, yes, if you're a fan on that level, you're a geek. There's no question. Do you think we're living in a dumbed-down America? Do you think that all these hyper-reality television shows have influenced art to a point where it's very difficult to get really intense, interesting movies made? We have to go super indie, or we have to go Europe?
Yeah, I do. I think there is a dumbing down, and I think it's kind of sad because I think, you know, every time there is a good movie, people go, first of all. You know, oh my God, Brokeback Mountain made $100 million. Well, it's not just, you know, it's because it was a good movie. And I think people are dying for something good. I think there is a dumbing down of America. I think there is too much readily available stuff that's not even bad. It's just mediocre on all fronts. But it's funny because I also think, you know, people keep asking me, and this kind of relates, people keep asking me why the resurgence of ballroom dancing. And I think, you know, we live in a world that is extremely isolated and extremely, it's very easy to be alienated from people. And I think, you know, the world is at war, and it makes it a weird place to live in. And I think when you dance with someone, you're forced to look them in the eye. You're forced to trust them if they're going to lift you or dip you. And you're forced to hold their hand. And in doing so, you end up communicating with them and you end up trusting them as a person and looking at them as a person. And I think people are starved for that kind of human contact.
Well, I think, too, we've made, and somebody mentioned this in one of our podcasts, one of the artists, that, you know, people spill their guts on the street with their cell phones. You can hear these intense conversations, subways, buses, and, you know, in a restaurant. There's no human interaction, although you think there is with a cell phone, but there really isn't. There's not this face-to-face, and dancing obviously is an expressive art form that allows for that human emotion.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Americans never hug each other. They
right.
never touch, which is a very European thing to do.
And you
I
see
think,
Europeans holding hands, walking down the street.
Yeah, and I think Americans yearn for that, but I also think, you know, what you're saying is the same reason why you can watch a reality TV show and you can convince yourself that you're becoming intimate with someone because you see how they are at home and you see them, you know, quote unquote uncensored, but you're not having an intimate relationship. You're watching TV, you know?
Yeah. And then it becomes hyper reality because, you know, those people they're acting for the camera.
It's become a science.
It really has.
I mean, they should start teaching acting. Acting for reality television
is
going to become a college course soon.
Right. Where do you see yourself in the next few years, Liz?
I would love to direct another movie.
I think that's safe to say that you will.
You think
you're
safe?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know. You know, it's such a weird. I'm not a 5-year plan kind of girl.
Right.
I'd like to start a family. It's like, you know, I want to do everything. It's like I want a family and I want to start a movie and I'd like to write. And I would like to become more active. Like, my big vow this year is I've got, like, 5 kind of hot-button issues that I'd like to become. And it's funny, totally inspired by working with Pierre on this project. Like, okay, it's actually not that hard to get involved and do something. I want to be political. I mean, like, it's everything. So we'll see where it pans out.
Well, I think you're on your way.
I hope you're right.
Yeah. Continued success. Thanks for being on the Culture Catch, and we'll look for you down the road.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
Who could dance with us or who could stand with us? Look at us tonight, we looking fabulous. Freshed it up to death and we just moving. Out on the town, putting on our dance shoes and 1 foot in and 1 foot out. Sexy salsa, what's that all about? Well, listen, as I take it back to old school and like Lena Horne, all them cats was cooling. See the lead, but yo, I can't take it. When that young thing like to shake, shake it, shake it. When she move forward and she back the thing up. And I gotta be on point and live on something. Cause my hood is breezy, it ain't easy. But for tonight, gonna be alright.
You've been listening to Liz Friedlander on The Culture Catch. I'd like to thank today's sponsors, WebHSP, for all of your web hosting needs, webhsp.com. And my friends, Frank, and all the crew at finaldraft.com, and now Final Draft AV. If you got to write a script, you may want to use Final Draft. This is Dusty Wright for The Culture Catch. We'll see you soon. Converge is the word. Okay.